Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Time. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Here's the snap. Here's the toss to Mixon running right across the 50, 45. Tackled by Cross at the 41. Checkmate. That'll do it. The Texans will beat the Colts on opening day. Stroud takes the knee, and it is over. The Texans win on opening day, knocking off the Colts on the road, 29-27, 1-0, with the Bears up next on Sunday Night Football.
Hell yeah. Mark Vandermeer on the call, 29-27, the final score. And, man, we got a lot to dig into today. A victorious Reaction Monday here on Sports Radio 610, in which the Texans are the only 1-0 team in the AFC South. Welcome in on a Reaction Monday, everybody. Good to be with you. Great to be with you. I'm Sean Pendergast. He is Seth Payne. And Seth, this is a beautiful day, man.
This is a great day. And honestly, the way that game unfolded and the way everything happened, the way they came by their victory, I couldn't be happier about the fact that it looks like the Texans have a genuine 1-2 punch now. They can beat you through the air. They can beat you on the ground. If a team decides, all right, look, we got to just try to limit this passing attack because it's so potentially lethal, then that's going to end up with 213 yards rushing by the Texans. That they're very capable with Damian Pierce averaged over 5 yards per carry on 3 carries. Your second leading rusher was Tank Dell. Stephon Diggs got in on the rush game as well. So all of that is awesome. But then I also do like that it was sloppier than a lot of us, including C.J. Stroud and D'Amico Ryans, would prefer. I feel like it's the perfect reminder of a good scare. A good scare to put in of, like, hey, man, we got to clean this stuff up. You can't be abandoning your cornerbacks in deep coverage, yep, in quarters coverage. You got to, as an offense... The only guy that looked really, really in sync and ready that's returned is Laremy Tunsil with his 2 false starts.
He's committed to his gimmick. Yeah,
he's right back. Yeah, Laremy Tunsil committing penalties. But otherwise, I mean, we'll get into this a little bit later. Like, Laremy, I've been talking a lot of smack on behalf of Laremy and how well he'd do against Leatu Latu, the rookie of the Colts.
Yeah.
Damn.
Okay.
Latu had some nice snaps versus Tunsil.
Okay, so he's going to be a problem. Yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah. Some nice snaps.
We're going to dig into this thing because it was a really compelling 3 hours, and obviously won the Texans. They win. They're 1-0. That's the big thing. They get the season started off right. 3 straight times they beat the Colts there. Now 9 straight road games in the AFC South that they've won, so all those streaks are still alive. CJ still hasn't thrown an interception in a divisional game yet, although it was close a couple of times with CJ. To me, Seth, the biggest thing, kind of playing off of what you just talked about with them being able to beat you multiple ways now, is that they didn't just run the football. They ran it well. Obviously, Joe Mixon, 30 carries, a buck 59. He averaged well over 5 yards per carry. But the fact that they ran it in the 2 instances that you have talked about and I have talked about, that are independent of the statistics, independent of averaging X amount of yards per carry, or independent of being a top 10 rushing team, they were able to move the ball and score touchdowns when they got in the red zone, in no small part because they actually have a threat running the football now. I know Diggs got 2 of those in there, but, you know, 2 short touchdowns. Mixon got the other one. But they were able to move the football in the red zone in part because of the rushing attack. And the biggest thing, that play that we heard at the very end, when they needed to burn 3.5 minutes of clock, you know, there wasn't any big, great burst run or anything like that, other than the one that put the game away was 9 yards. But they were in 2nd and 7 and 3rd and 3, and they were moving the football and grinding the clock. And they were doing it when the Colts knew that they wanted to do it. When the Colts knew the Texans wanted to run the football, on 3rd and 3 to close the game, this is just our good ones against your good ones, and we're going to beat you. And they were able to do that on that play that everybody just heard. That's the most encouraging thing to me, is that situationally they were able to move the football on the ground. Not just various times throughout the game. And by the way, Joe Mixon's long run of the day on this buck 59 was 13 yards. So it wasn't 159 yards. It was buoyed by a 65-yard run.
Right.
He was grinding 6, 8, 9, 5, 11, 13, 13. Like, it was a steady beating by Joe Mixon in the offensive line.
The one that I got excited about was when it was 2nd and 6 and Joe Mixon ran for 3 yards at the end of the drive, at the end of the game, because it was against a heavily loaded box. They were committed fully to stopping the run, and they ground out 3 yards, and they end up getting the first down on the next one. But that right there is the test. Can you run effectively? And that's not technically a win of a run, but compared to last year, and given in the full context of what they were able to do on the ground, it was great. Boy, one of the best plays of the game, in my mind, was a Joe Mixon run up the middle on an inside zone where Kenyon Green got out in space and absolutely threw Zaire Franklin out of the bar. It looked like an action movie, Sean, where somebody is falling off the hero lets the villain drop. It just shoves him off the skyscraper, and they show the scene of him flailing his arms.
That would be Die Hard.
I thought it was Die Hard.
Yeah.
Looked like there might as well have been a bad green screen behind it and everything. Zaire Franklin just lost in space. Like George Clooney at the end of that space movie where he goes flying off into the void. Yeah.
There you go.
It was beautiful. Gravity. Yeah. It was Zaire Franklin stars in Gravity.
Yeah. Mm. Featuring Kenyon Green. Yes.
Yeah, so Juice Scruggs and Kenyon Green, much improved. And right. Kenyon Green especially. Just looks like a different human being from 2 years ago. I haven't gone through and watched the All-22 yet or anything. There were blemishes, to be sure, on the offensive line. The pass protection was certainly not pristine. I mean, Laremy Tunsil, he looks rusty. He looks like his... Yeah. I don't know if maybe it was because they were wearing dark pants and white jerseys, but I felt like Laramie's legs looked a little bit skinny.
You think?
For coming back from his knee surgery and the way he looked out there at times, he didn't look like himself.
Yeah,
he had some really good snaps too. I talked a lot of smack on his behalf about going against Latu, and there were some rough snaps.
He did not back you up. Yeah, you were like Matt Damon speaking for Ed Norton in Rounders. Like, no. I'm good for this debt too, mobsters, Russian mobsters. Yeah. It's fine. And then you look up and Laremy Tunsil's hightailing it out of the state and you're left having to pay $15,000 to Russian mobsters. A lot of movie analogies early today. I like it. So that's the offensive side. We're going to dig deeper into this stuff as we roll on with the show here. Texans win yesterday, 29-27. How about the defense? Shutting down. I mean, I know there were 350-yard plays that all set up touchdowns, or at least directly could have been or were touchdowns. But I think the story defensively is they shut down Jonathan Taylor yesterday.
Right.
16 carries, 48 yards. They cut the head off the snake with Jonathan Taylor yesterday.
Yeah, you know what I was surprised by yesterday is a lot of people, even after the game, were livid, like genuinely angry that Anthony Richardson had so many yards on the ground. To be clear, look, Anthony Richardson had 56 yards rushing. He was a leading rusher on the day. Jonathan Taylor had 48 yards rushing. That's going to happen. Yeah. Richardson's going to get his yardage on the ground. That's who he is. Honestly, if Anthony Richardson had any semblance of consistency, he might end up being the best quarterback of all time, and if he could stay healthy. But he's so far from that yesterday was the full Anthony Richardson experience.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to get yardage on the ground because he's a physical freak. He's like a bulky Cam Newton, but more athletic. It's crazy. The Texans linebackers did a really good job of handling the RPO game, being patient, staying in coverage until they knew for sure that it was passed. I'd credit D'Amico and Matt Burke with mixing things up defensively and how they handled the RPO, so they didn't give a consistent look for the Colts to really see. But, I mean, obviously the big thing is the big plays, the explosives. Jimmy Ward's got to stay over the top when he's supposed to stay over the top.
Yeah.
He's supposed to, well, and even the big long, freakishly good throw by Richardson, it looked like they were in quarters coverage. It's not over the top. It's just that Jimmy Ward couldn't run with Alec Pierce.
Right.
I mean, it's Alec Pierce. You're blaming Derek Stingley on that. The ball was caught two-thirds of the way across the field away from Derek Stingley. Jimmy Ward's got to be better in
better position. Where is safety supposed
to
be? Yeah. In that play, yeah. That's funny you say that about the Anthony Richardson experience. I'm looking, I do my notes that I post that have all kinds of curse words in them and stuff. Literally, the drive that ended with the Kalen Bullock – interception. I literally bracketed that on my notes, and I wrote Anthony Richardson experience in all caps, because on that drive, he had the 24-yard scramble for the first down. He had another third and two, might have been a read option or something. He ran for two first downs on third downs on that series, but he also missed a wide-open A.D. Mitchell over the top that would have been a walk-in touchdown, and then he threw an interception to Kalen Bullock that looked like might not have been his fault. Everybody was slipping on that turf
it was yesterday. That was the unfortunate thing about yesterday was it was just – and you know what? I'm not making excuses for anybody, but – it does contribute to the sloppiness. Yeah. Obviously, your routes and everything aren't going to be as precise. I did a live stream yesterday, and I was kind of I realized afterwards that I had barely mentioned Nico Collins, which is absurd. We're just guilty of the same thing.
Don't you worry. He gets the whole next segment to himself, buddy. Nico Collins was amazing yesterday.
The catch he made on the sideline. I mean,
to help close the game out there. The 3rd and 11.
Obviously the deep shot was the most impressive on the box score and everything, and impressive regardless. But the combination of C.J. Stroud throwing to those guys on the sideline and making catches that in real time look absolutely impossible that they were catches. Just absolutely no way in hell. And then there you go. And it wasn't even close. I mean, the question had nothing to do with whether his knee was in or anything. It was whether he possibly could have bobbled the ball at all.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even, and from the first angle, I thought that it could be. I think from the other angle, I was like, well, there's no way in hell it was enough to challenge.
To overturn it.
It looked like he had control the whole time.
Yep. Let's get to Nico, because the dynamic that existed with the Texans and the Colts for years was there was a nemesis that you knew was going to destroy you every single time, T.Y. Hilton. I'm glad that the Colts are getting a taste of their own medicine, and we're going to relive the magic of Nico Collins coming up in the next segment. We'll do that next here on a Victorious Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Big time playmaker, right? And he's done it a couple times here versus the Colts. So that's what Nico does. He makes big time plays in that. In the moment when we needed it most, like, what a play. What an awesome catch for him to get down and bounce. It was really big time play.
I hope D'Amico's voice is permanently stuck like that. I wanted to make a transition. He's obviously got a cold. He kind of jokingly, after his opening statement where I think he was, I can't even remember who he was talking about, he kind of like fake punched his own throat.
Yeah.
It was pretty funny. He acknowledged that he's got a little bit of something going on right off the bat. Just stay away from everybody else, D'Amico. Don't make any physical contact with people.
If he
kind of transitioned into like an older dude with a raspy voice, I would kind of like that.
I think it was. Did he say he had something going on medically? Because he sounded fine when we did the Coach's Corner interview. I know he wasn't doing that literally before the game. He does it on Friday with Mark. This same thing happened to him in the preseason too. He lost his voice in a game.
It's probably just allergies or something. You know what happens to me? I get a little bit of post-nasal drip, and all of a sudden I'm out for a week.
Yeah.
What happened? Does Seth have something scary? No, he's got a little bit of a trickle, and it's completely destroyed the one thing that matters for him in his profession.
His voice.
Certainly not his brain. Right. It's his actual voice.
Voice greater than brain, yeah.
Yeah, so D'Amico was either shouting a lot, or maybe he's got a little bit of allergies or something.
Well, there was plenty to shout at. I mean, it wasn't a perfect game. We'll get into that, but we got to touch on Nico here. We didn't hit on Nico much in the open, and I had the same thing going on you did, Seth. As I'm writing down the storylines from the game, like, ooh, the run game. Oh, Nick Caserio's acquisitions. You know, like, Stephon Diggs had two touchdowns. We haven't even talked about Diggs yet. He had two touchdowns. You know, all this stuff, all the storylines. They shut down Jonathan Taylor. I get to, like, the third or fourth one. I'm like, I haven't even mentioned Nico yet. Nico.
I know.
He's incredible.
It's almost like he's become enough of a fixture. It's like mentioning the moon or something. Like, the moon is there or whatever. Yeah,
right.
It's always there, right? Except for, like, God takes it away for a couple nights a month. I don't know why. So I go to church extra to try to bring it back.
That's right.
That's how I know that my faith is real. That's how I am with Nico. He is the moon.
Yep.
So Nico, and honestly, that play when they're closing the game out to catch the ball on the sideline, there was just so much of the precision of C.J. Stroud and his receivers. And you look up, and it's funny because, I mean, even though the Colts did everything they could to take away the passing game, And there was nothing necessarily spectacular about that game. You look up and C.J. Stroud's one of only several quarterbacks in the league who had a passer rating over 100 yesterday.
Yeah.
115.9 passer rating.
Dude, we're watching the game up here, and this is well into the second half, and we were all looking at each other going, that's you know, the Texans is one of the points in the game, and they're up by 9. And we're like, you know, this isn't bad considering CJ's had like a B-minus game for, you know, so far or whatever, you know, like, because there were a couple times where, you know, there were a couple times he got fortunate. You know, the one where he's trying to throw it away and the guy intercepts it in the heel. I think it was Juju Brents.
Just his heel, yeah.
His heel hit the, I mean, that was lucky, a little lucky. But you're absolutely right. Like, you realize after the game, because CJ was 24 of 32 for 234 yards, no interceptions, threw the two short touchdowns to Diggs, passer rating of over 115. Like, you look at the box score, you go, this is a great day. And you watch it with your own eyes, and you go, this is a really good day. But you start to realize, we're going to get into Nico, but with CJ, you start to realize, like, he's not being held to the quarterback standard now. He's being held to the CJ standard. Like, he's the expectations for him, that this is like a normal, like, this is just an average game for CJ Stroud, you know?
And honestly, this was a really good game to have right off the bat, because you're going to face teams like this where the Colts look at, I'm guessing, their front seven is the strength of their defense, a little less certain about the back end. So they face a team like the Texans and they're going to say, all right, well, let's try to take care of the run with the guys up front, and we'll sit back and play coverage and try not to allow anything deep. So the challenge for a quarterback, especially one who's wired like C.J. Stroud, where you want to push the ball deep, the challenge is, all right, I'm just going to have to sit and dink and dunk and hand the ball off. And C.J. knows this intellectually, but it's a different thing to play it out in real time.
Sure.
You know, and really feel it and know what it's like. It's like being financially responsible with your investments during a recession. Like, you know what you're supposed to do.
Right.
You're not supposed to panic, but it's really, really hard to do
in
the moment.
My neighbor gave me this pamphlet, and this looks like a really good way to get my money back.
I'm going
to
get rid of all these super solid stocks that are down for the moment because I got to get out of this hole. So I think that was a good challenge for them to face. But then even in doing all that, It's exactly how you would have predicted it before the season. In any given game, you can't figure out which wide receiver is going to go off.
Yeah.
And yesterday it was Nico Collins, you know, with 6 receptions, but also just by virtue of the one huge play that gives him 117 yards. But Stephon Diggs has 6 receptions, but 2 touchdowns.
The 2 touchdowns.
And, you know, Tank Dell has 3 receptions, but also a very impressive run. It's going to be like that.
Yeah.
Next week, it might be Stephon Diggs. Next week, it might be Tank Dell that goes
100%. Off. 100%. In a game where C.J. Stroud had, I'll say, just 234 yards passing, because that's below his average, everybody that seemed to matter on that offense ate. You know, like, the three big receivers all did something to affect winning in that game. Nobody more than Nico Collins. So this is what I love about this Nico Collins thing, Seth. The last 2 regular season games the Texans have played, yesterday and Week 18, have both been at Lucas Oil Field, and Nico Collins has gone off in both of them. And I love that Colts fans are getting a dose of what we got with T.Y. Hilton for a decade, which was, damn, this guy is going to get $1.50 somehow or some way, it feels like, every single time. And if you recall, 2023, just to refresh everybody's memory, Week 18, must-have game for the Texans and the Colts. Nico went 9 catches, 195 yards, and a touchdown. And that was without Stephon Diggs and Tank Dell out on the field like yesterday was. That was Nico as the sole weapon out there, really. No Joe Mixon either in that game.
Yeah.
Like, it was Nico, and he had the big touchdown to open the game for 75 yards. He had the 29-yard catch and run late in the second quarter where he trucked the same guy twice at the end of it to set up a touchdown. He had the catch on 2nd and 14, where he just came out of nowhere, looked like CJ's throwing the ball away, came out of nowhere, clearly broke the spirit of the Colts, as we've heard on the Trenches podcast, that 2nd and 14. They hated that. So that was last season. Same thing this season, man. Like, Nico had plays where you're going, damn, like, there aren't many receivers that can make these kind of plays. Let's relive a little bit of the magic here. This was the one, you pointed it out, Seth. 55-yard catch. There are not many guys that go up and make this grab on a C.J. Stroud deep ball.
C.J. looking. C.J. guns long down the left side. Nico Collins down there, and he's got that catch inside the 15, down to the 12. double coverage, doesn't matter. Big play to Collins.
We knew we had to take a shot. You know, we started out kind of slow on the offensive end, you know, so I feel like for us, man, we just had to make a play. And Seven, he trusted in me, and my job was just run. And I ran, man, just licked the ball in the air to go make a play for the team, and that's what I did.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a great feeling, you know, just continue to build, work on me, and continue to make plays.
That was Nico was on the post game with us yesterday. So we
we
had him take us through each of the three catches that we're playing here. So we'll get a little director's cut. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Great. Yeah.
What'd you think of that one? What'd you think of that 55-yard one right there?
I was happy about that.
Yeah, me too.
I think that again, you know, it was one of those things. It was really well placed ball for where it ended up. I don't know exactly. You know, like the between the turf and whatever else going on, I think that CJ maybe lacked a little extra oomph on exact, but for where, if you're going to make a throw in a contested catch, that's where exactly it had to be for Nico to go up and get it. And we've seen this now. I mean, Nico is, he's T.Y. Hilton. It is, as T.Y. Hilton was to the Texans, now Nico Collins is to the Colts. There's something in him. Remember those runs last year? It was the run after the catch last year in the Colts games where you could see, oh, he wants to hurt people. He was hitting people. He could have gotten flagged for a late hit out of bounds as a wide receiver last year. Yeah, as the offensive player last year in the playoffs. Or excuse me, the play-in game.
Yeah.
And I think there is just that. There's 100%, I'm convinced of it. There's something about Nico versus the Colts. He just wants to take their souls.
He laughed. That was the first thing I led with the interview. I'm like, you kind of like that place, huh? And he just started cackling. So that was a 55-yard catch, set up a touchdown. This was a big one, too. This was 3rd and 14, and this was the drive that ended with the Mixon touchdown to make it 22-13. CJ gets flushed out of the pocket. CJ goes running backwards, kind of Case Keenum style a little bit, then starts rolling out to his right. Turned out to be the right thing to do. And Nico just found a little soft spot, and CJ does one of those, no, 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 oh, okay, good throw kind of things right here.
Here's the snap. Does CJ have time? A bit. Now he's flushed out to the right. Stroud scrambling, looking for somebody to get open. Throws back across his body. And he hits Nico Collins, who dives down to the 36-yard line. First down, just like last year.
Go
ahead.
We work on those type plays, you know, in practice. You know, just never know. You know, play break down like it did. You know, just scrimmage drill. You know, just find an open hole. You know, with Seven, you know, got the ball in his hands, you know, amazing things happen. You know, so you saw him in the soft spot in the zone, you know, and had to move the sticks. You know, so that was a big play. You know, he trusted me and found the right spot in the zone, man, and made the play for the squad.
You know, watching the Friday night game, the Packers versus the Eagles, there were a couple times in that game, and I can't remember which quarterback it was, but Todd Blackledge was, you know, criticizing the quarterback for throwing over the middle late in the down. And I'm kind of like, all right, Todd, you sound a little old here, because there are a few quarterbacks in the league right now that are actually really good at that, and CJ Stroud is one of them. As a Texans fan, I sat there and I watched. I was like, maybe it's a bad decision if you're Jalen Hurts or what have you, but CJ did it twice yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, he did it to Tank Dell. He did it to Nico Collins, where he threw across his body. The one to Tank Dell was kind of like a no-look almost.
Yep.
Back over the middle, across his body, late in the down, he's just got a really good feel on the scramble drill with those guys. This is where all the off-season work and the communication really comes into play.
Yep.
Because he's done this multiple times. He's done it versus the Colts, especially multiple times.
We love that. All right, so that was a 3rd and 14 catch, set up the Joe Mixon touchdown. Last one, you've touched on it, Seth. This didn't literally clinch the game. Mixon's run that we heard in the open did, but this one kept the drive alive that ended up clinching the game. This is a 3rd and 11, just after a 3rd and 6, which Kenyon Green gets a false start, and now it's 3rd and 11. So it was 3rd and 6, Kenyon Green false start. Now it's 3rd and 11. The place is going bonkers. This place is going nuts. We're going to get the ball back, and we're going to go down and get a field goal and win this game. That's what all those yokels from Indianapolis thought was going to happen. C.J. Stroud and Nico Collins said, not on our watch.
Crowd deafening. Here's the snap. C.J. looking, firing right sideline, and Nico Collins with the catch. He gets the feet down for a first down at the 41-yard line.
Another bad spot, Mark.
The spot is tricky. It's right at the 40.
You got to look at this.
Which is exactly where they needed to get to, and they may measure this.
Well, they didn't measure it, but they did review it to see if Nico caught it. And Seth, as you pointed out before, the knee was obviously down. I was worried about the same thing you were. Were they going to get really, really technical with, was the ball moving? Did he have, because the ball touched the ground.
Yeah.
But Nico, they ruled correctly that he had control of it. Here's Nico afterwards. I asked him after the game when he was on with us in the post game, did you know right away as you were going to the ground that it was a catch?
It was a catch. It was a catch. I knew it was a catch. And I felt my knee and my toe. I knew I directed, you know, and I controlled it all the way down. You know, so I already knew it was a catch. You know, I didn't want to waste no time with the review. You know, so but they showed it on the big screen. I was like, yeah, I know it's a catch, so let's go.
Pointing at the sometimes, big screen.
Sometimes the actual participant in the play, as we know from baseball, is actually the worst judge of whether
yes,
it was or wasn't.
True.
You know, I don't know. I don't always trust. I trust that he's saying what he believes,
yeah.
But you never know for sure. That was great. I mean, we've just seen that so many times now. These throws and catches on the sideline between C.J. Stroud and either Nico Collins and Tank Dell that are just unbelievably precise. And they don't even necessarily make the highlight reels if people aren't going back and really watching and seeing how incredible they are. That was really good. Speaking of spots, it's so annoying. They got to change this rule. When the quarterback dives, they treat it like a slide.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I know people wanted D'Amico to review that spot early in the game. That it's an annoying rule that they do for quarterback safety. They don't want quarterbacks diving forward. It makes sense, I guess, because you're trying to protect your most valuable asset, but it
yes.
really, really sucks when you see it play out.
I guess. Man, Vandy was great on that call, the 3rd and 11. I didn't notice it, but the first time where he just at the beginning, he goes, crowd is deafening. Like that, like that's, you could hear it like that. Just, that's a good job, man. Like just kind of setting, not just describing what you're seeing on the field, but like setting the stage for how it feels in the building there.
Yeah, know? I thought, who knows? Vandermeer, after those couple years of the Jack Easterby, Lovie Smith, Lovie was fine. He was a perfect. Lovie should have been hired instead of David Culley if he had to have a bridge coach. But I worried that maybe Vandermeer would get depressed and just ask somebody to put him out on an iceberg to drift off and die or something. He sounds rejuvenated.
He's better than that now.
He wants to kill every Viking in the village and take power and control for himself.
Yeah, he's better than ever, man. He's Vandy's on it. All right, headlines. We will obviously dig into the Texans here. Big day yesterday, man. First place Houston Texans in the AFC South 1 week in. Everybody else loses in the division, so that was good to see. We've not touched on the Astros yet. Overall, a good weekend, but boy, this Verlander thing, we got to talk about this. That was rough last night, and all kinds of stuff going on in the NFL. We'll get to all of it in headlines coming up next.
And Pendergast with today's headlines.
Here's the snap. Here's the toss to Mixon running right across the 50, 45. Tackled by Cross at the 41. Checkmate. That'll do it. The Texans will beat the Colts on opening day. Stroud takes the knee and it is over. The Texans win on opening day, knocking off the Colts on the road. 29-27, 1-0. With the Bears up next on Sunday Night Football.
Man, for years, over a decade, the Texans could not win in Indianapolis. Now that's all they do, man. Last three times they've been up there, victorious up in Indy, including yesterday, 29-27, the final score. I think we got a taste of the big story yesterday, Seth, in that first call by Vandy we just heard.
Yeah.
Joe Mixon was that dude yesterday.
Ooh, man, and it was, you laid it out perfectly earlier in the show when you talk about the fact that his long run was how many yards yesterday, Sean?
13 yards.
It was just a steady churning.
Yeah.
It was great. When a team decides to take the top off the offense and just try to limit these wide receivers from doing too much damage, A, you still did some damage downfield, but B, can you run the ball? When the defense basically invites you to run the ball, that's like, you got to be able to do it. In the last 2 years, the Texans haven't been anywhere close to that. And I would include even in the Bill O'Brien offenses, there were years where they had lots of rushing yardage, but they couldn't really run when they needed to run.
Right.
It's been a long time. I don't want to invoke the name Arian Foster, but It's been that long since it's felt like, all right, this team can flat out run the football. And I think they might end up being that team. And you credit, honestly, the offensive line is night and day in terms of how they understand zone running, how they were pat. There were some hiccups. You know, the one Grover Stewart tackle for a loss, that was just basically bad teamwork between Laremy Tunsil and Kenyon Green, but they didn't get physically beat. Mm. They just had a little bit of a miscue, and that'll get cleaned up. But Juice Scruggs and Kenyon Green had some great, great snaps in that game, in the run game, that I don't think we would have seen last year, and certainly not the year before.
Yeah, it was great, man. They did it in that environment, too. Like, they did that. That wasn't at home where the crowd's quieting down. Like, they did it.
Right.
They did it in an environment that was raucous for most of that game.
Oh, okay. Not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but very quickly.
Yeah.
Caleb Williams did not look great yesterday,
right,
and he's going to come into NRG Stadium with a fully enclosed stadium, almost.
One panel still. Yes.
There might be 0.2 decibels seeping out the top, but other than that.
Decibel leakage. It's going to be decibel leakage.
Oh, man, the Bears broadcasters are going to be like, I don't know. I think they might be piping in noise.
Yeah.
Go die. Go die in advance. That's you die today before you can even utter that nonsense.
I love it. The Bears are 7 days out, and Seth already told their announced team to go die. You're on it.
I'm going to seek them out. I'm going to find them in the damn box. I'll heckle him.
Let's hear from D'Amico talking about this very thing, running the football and what it does for you.
Yeah, it opens everything up, right? When you can run the ball, it opens everything up. When it comes to the passing game, they got to put eight in the box, right? So now you have a lot of single coverage on the outside, and, you know, that's where Nico, Tank, Diggs, they can make their plays.
Yeah, it was pick your poison, look, man.
And going back to the Arian Foster days, you know, one thing Gary Kubiak would always stress is like, hey, just because you've got eight guys in the box it's not an excuse to not run the ball. And these days especially, sometimes a loaded box means seven in the box just because of the way personnel groupings have gone. But that's why at the end when they were closing it out, one of my favorite plays was a 3-yard run on second and six.
Yes.
Just because the box was immensely loaded. The Colts loaded up to stop the run, and the Texans still got positive yardage out of it. I thought the blocking was great for the most part, but then there were also plays in that game where I think last year or the year before, you might have said, well, there's penetration in the backfield, and that's why it was dead. Yeah, there's penetration in the backfield, but on zone runs, usually that means there's also a cutback lane somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe Mixon found those cutback lanes when there was penetration into the backfield, and that was really sweet to see.
Yeah, it was nice to see, man. The whole game you're watching, you go, okay, this is what I've been told. This is what I've been told about. This is how it's supposed to look. This running game looked really good. Let's get to the Astros. Overall, not a bad weekend. They take 2 out of 3 from one of the hotter teams in baseball. The bats did come alive. They scored 8 runs, 11 runs, and 6 runs.
Yay, bats!
And yet, I feel like, yay, bats. And they're up by 4.5 games still. So the lead in the division is still comfortable. Seattle still stinks.
Did they come to life to the tune of overcoming an 8-0 deficit at one point?
The Astros?
The Astros, yeah.
Not last night, no.
Because that's what they needed, Sean.
They did
that's
need
what
that.
They needed, yeah.
Well, full disclosure, I saw almost none of this game last night.
Right, you were doing your post game. Verlander was a mess.
He was a mess. He was a mess.
Yeah, Verlander was an absolute mess.
Yeah, 3 innings pitched, 8 hits, 8 earned runs, didn't strike anybody out in the 3 innings, which is, you know, that's an issue. 75 pitches in 3 innings. Like, it was horrible. Here was Verlander just saying, not my night.
Felt good physically, but obviously the results were atrocious. guys hit a lot of good pitches, I thought.
Okay. He's got, I got to do the math as to how many games. They've got roughly like 28 games left, I think. Something. I think there's, I don't know, 71, 62. I forget what their record is. He's probably got 4 starts, 5 starts left to work his way into the rotation. He's out of the rotation right now for the postseason.
I'm going to tell you a scary stat, and yet there's two sides to this coin.
Okay.
The last time Verlander yielded 8 earned runs in 3 or fewer innings was May 16th, 2013.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it's been a full decade. Now, the other side of the coin is, all right, yeah, and he ended up playing pretty well. You know, he's gone on to play for more than a decade.
It didn't ruin him, yeah.
Verlander has a history of figuring things out when he's having some hiccups and hit some rough stretches. The difference is that he's now an old man.
He's 41, yes.
And daylight's a burning, my friend. Yeah. I don't feel great about Verlander right now.
No, I don't. I hate it. See, you're right. I couldn't see it because we were finishing up the post game show when the game was starting, and I'm getting these push notifications. I'm like, damn it.
It wasn't like they were just, you know, hitting a bunch of great pitches or anything. But Espada tried to put a dress on it and call it pretty, but it was
I know. I can't even listen to it. I had it slotted. I don't even want to listen to Espada talk about this because I'm like, you can't put lipstick on this one. Let's get to the NFL for a couple minutes here as we close out headlines. The rest of the AFC South lost. Blown leads were the story of the early games. Jacksonville blowing a 14-0 lead to the Miami Dolphins. Tennessee blowing a 17-0 lead to the Bears in a game where Caleb Williams didn't even hit 100 yards passing. Jonathan Owens had a block punt return for a touchdown, and Will Levis threw one of the most ridiculous pick sixes that you're ever going to see. And it was made even more ridiculous. He threw the ball from his knees, like shoveled it from his knees straight to a Bears defensive back who took it to the house. And while his Titans teammates are turning and trying to chase the guy, Will Levis is on his knees just with his hands on his helmet, not moving. Like, dude, get up and get involved.
This is where I get. I love being in the AFC South for this reason right now. We're at a nexus where I think, you know, the Texans are about to become very, very, very prominent. But you have these quarterbacks like Will Levis and Anthony Richardson that, for the most part, most of the people in the national media and other fan bases haven't actually watched all that much. Anthony Richardson just hasn't played all that much. But I still hear very smart people like that are bullish on Will Levis.
I don't get it.
I'm like, you clearly have not watched him play at all, other than just maybe a smattering of plays. Anthony Richardson's the same way. That play, that throw yesterday he made off of 1 foot under pressure, just downfield, splitting the coverage. It was incredible.
Yeah.
But, man, you got to watch every snap and realize this dude, he's a magnificent home run hitter who bats 125.
Yes.
He needs to clean some stuff up. If he's gonna, on any given Sunday, he's a nightmare to face.
Yeah.
It's scary as hell.
Yeah.
Scary as hell. But in terms of becoming an actually genuinely good NFL quarterback, that can actually, you know,
long way
have
away.
Awesome regular seasons and go to the playoffs. He's got a long ways to go.
Long way away. All right. We'll circle back to the Texans. Joe Mixon, we'll hear from Joe. Joe really likes his new friends. And also, if the Texans had lost this game, the A topic on this game would have shifted completely. We wouldn't even be talking about Mixon. The A topic would have been one of the most annoying A topics of all time. We'll touch on it briefly, and we'll do Acknowledge Me at 7:20. That's all coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
DJ with the toss to Mixon, running left, and he's in! Touchdown, Houston! Joe Mixon, 3-yard TD run.
I like the end zone dance, too. Love it.
Yeah, it starts with our offensive line. Like, the way they controlled the line of scrimmage was awesome, right? And then Joe, he stepped up big time for us. Well, we needed him to run the ball. He did. They knew it was run. We knew it was run. And he still made the play. So, man, just excited to have him on our side. You know, we've seen it all training camp, and it was exciting to see him do it here his first game.
Yeah. You saw it all training camp, but nobody else got to see Joe until yesterday. That was a whole lot of fun, man. You know, if that Joe Mixon, I forget who said it to me. I apologize if you're listening, whoever said it to me last night. If it was a caller, it might have been Clint. I think it might have been Clint Sterner when we were talking. He's like, you know what Joe Mixon did, Chief? He killed training camp dead. Like, he proved he ain't need no training camp.
Well, for running backs especially, that is, man, any kind of soreness or whatever, if you got a veteran, just those guys have a limited snap count in life, I think. You just got to be really extra careful about it. Especially, man, look, he got 30 carries yesterday. I guess this hadn't even really occurred to me, but looking at the length of the season and what have you, there's no way in hell he can go 30 carries every single game.
No.
So, I mean, that is something where at some point, look, if teams are going to really try to take away the deep stuff, that you got to do what they did a little bit yesterday. Your wide receivers step in. Tank Dell's the second leading rusher on the team. Damian Pierce had 3 carries for 16 yards and looked good on all of them. So that's so far so good. I'm 100% honest when I say I hope I was dead wrong about my Damian Pierce concerns. I would love to be just an absolute idiot on that. And so far so good. But, right, like that was a very, very good start. At some point, he can't be getting 30 carries per game.
No. Joe, tell us about the season you ran for 3,500 yards. Well, I carried the ball 512 times.
And I never walked again. Right. So they do have a 3-year deal with him, you know. I'd like to see the end of this thing.
Yeah.
I thought that as far as his dance, I had asked on Twitter what dance that was. I don't think it was a black fraternity step or anything.
Okay.
Sometimes, usually when I don't know a dance, people are like, oh, yeah, that's a Q Dog thing or something. I think that was an original. I think that might have been a Joe Mixon original. I'm not sure. Somebody text in if you know what that dance was. I tried it a little bit last night, but then I felt a groin tear coming on.
They've got so much rehearsed dance stuff between, not just with CJ and guys, but other guys have their dances with each other. I'm like, man, don't take up too much of the hard drive, man.
I need to know before I start to try to learn the dance for TikTok if it's a black fraternity dance, because I don't want to get on there and be like, you know, disrespecting anybody.
Insensitive, So this was Joe Mixon back in training camp. And Seth, as you pointed out many times, that Joe Mixon last year was a little miscast because of how Cincinnati ran the ball. They ran a lot out of shotgun last year, which is, you know, maybe not suited best to Joe Mixon's running style. They ran a lot more yesterday, a ton, obviously, with CJ under center. A lot of I formation. We'll hear Joe talking about a fullback here in just a second. But remember this back in training camp. This was Joe Mixon, day 2 of training camp, talking about, he mentions the Cincinnati Bengals.
I know for a fact, as long as I'm in great position to win, like, it's going to be night and day compared to how I was in Cincinnati. You know what I'm saying? So, like I say, I'm very optimistic with how this offense will be ran, how I'll be using this offense.
Okay, and one game in, the optimism is fulfilled here, man. 30 carries,
man, all this stuff.
59.
You know, we talk about scheme fit and all that, but in the zone runs, boy, the offensive line looked much better than they have. Going back to last season when this offense was new, they look like it's starting to click for them. They're starting to get a feel. There were some glitches. There were some times where the adjacent offensive linemen weren't really on the same page, but that was encouraging just because there were plenty of examples of them being perfectly choreographed and the timing was awesome. It was like a Joe Mixon touchdown celebration. The times like Grover Stewart's big tackle, that was more the communication and the teamwork between Laramie Tunsil and Kenyon Green than it was anything else. It wasn't like they were getting physically beat. So I'm encouraged that it's actually going to get better. And Joe Mixon just has a really good feel for knowing where the cutback lane is, understanding the blocking scheme in front of him. It was very, very nice to see.
Joe Mixon called it a grown man running game yesterday in the post game. You know, it's not the running out of shotgun. It's guys lining up, busting each other in the mouth. Here was Mixon. Mixon with a little shout out to a rookie as well.
No doubt. That's exactly what it was. I mean, you know, I've been on the lineman, you know, training camp. I wasn't in there too much in training camp, but I'm just letting them know what I see, how to hit and how to be, man. And they doing everything they can to open them holes and do everything that we got to make them, however we can, to make them pay, man. And, first off, special shout out to Stover. I mean, he made critical blocks. Them guys on the edges, they make crucial blocks, and we made them pay. But, you know, like they said, the grown man football, I'm just happy. This is my first time really probably seeing a fullback, and I can't remember the last time I seen a fullback in front of me, man. So it's a hell of a feeling, man, being on the winning side of the things, and I'm just glad I'm on this side of, you know, playing with Houston, man.
That's exactly... I was so happy when I heard him talk about how he'd been working with the offensive line, because that it's so crucial. And the offensive linemen sometimes don't, you know, they don't really necessarily understand what the running back is seeing and vice versa. That's why, especially in zone runs, but any run scheme, you know, where old school blocking, it's a little bit more straightforward. In zone, there's a lot of teamwork between not just the running back and the offensive line, but the quarterback and the running back, and all of those little things that Joe Mixon has just a wealth of experience with. He can tell those guys, look, there was one play, where Kenyon Green trucked Zaire Franklin, just made a fool out of Zaire Franklin. Juice Scruggs did a really good job of just taking the defensive tackle where he wants to go, just riding him down the line. You don't have to physically dominate guys. Sometimes it's just a matter of like, oh, okay, you took that step. I'm going to help you along your way. It's kind of like if you're escorting somebody out of a club and you kind of get them in that arm bar
right.
and just walk them right out.
Moving them, yeah. It makes
move
sense.
Move along, drunk fella.
Makes sense. Third and three, had to have it. Texans get it by giving the ball to Joe Mixon, and the game is over. Here was Joe Mixon on the clinching play, the game that the play that put the game away.
Yeah, so, I mean, basically, it was meant to go front side, and basically the linebackers basically screened over the top, and I just canceled his gap replaced his gap where he was supposed to go and made him pay for it. So I'm just glad I was able to close it out, you know, in a crucial moment.
Yeah, and look, that play too. I still have concerns about Damian Pierce, but he looked good yesterday. But there was a play in the preseason where I broke it down and I showed where the cutback lane was. And when you stop the screenshot, what people kept saying is like, "Yeah, but there's a linebacker there." Like, no, but watch. The linebackers are flowing. Like, that's where it looks like, if you look at a screenshot of it, it looks like there's a linebacker in the hole. But no. That's gonna change. Arian Foster was so brilliant at that because there were times where it looked like he had the defense on a string. You know, like he could just snatch the defense with a yo-yo and then cut back against the grain. Joe Mixon's got that yo-yo ability.
Mm-hmm.
He walks the dog with the defense.
Yep. Great
kids,
to see.
The yo-yo was a toy that we used to use back before we had so much electronic gadgetry.
Right. Yeah.
Yo-yo. It was amazing. It was a wheel on a string, and yeah. You could spin it. And
hours
stuff. You could
of
never
fun.
Do as much as you thought you could.
But. Hours of fun. Yeah, you needed skills to do the real stuff, where you rock the baby and things like that.
Well, there are no YouTube tutorials. You had to be like, you're looking at like a diagram on like a piece of paper that like Yo-Yo gave you.
It was like a pamphlet they gave you with it. Like, yeah, it's no. Slinky.
Dude, you could pull so much.
If you could yo-yo back in the day?
In my 12-year-old mind, that's what it was.
Yeah.
I'm going to learn how to yo-yo, and then all the ladies are going to come
mm-hmm.
up begging.
And they're
yeah.
going to come over to my house and play with my slinky up and down the stairs. Yeah, yeah.
Never get that to work either.
So, Mixon, big story.
49 years old, same.
Same, samesies. If the Texans had lost this game, if for some reason they don't convert that third and three, they give the ball back to the Colts, and Anthony Richardson throws another 55-yard pass to put them in field goal position, and they win the game 30-29, we would have been spending the entire post-game show and at least half of this show talking about the just complete cluster bleep on the part of many people at the end of the half of this game.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. First of all, I did not like, for independent of all the botched refereeing and communication that went on, For a coach who approached this game pretty aggressively, D'Amico Ryans going for it on fourth down a couple of times,
yeah.
especially down in goal to go, going for two early in the game, which we've had a lot of people ask on the text page, should he have been doing that? For a coach who was doing very aggressive things, the overall approach to that last drive of the first half was very conservative, I thought. Almost like they were playing for three.
I think they were, you know, trying to burn time because they have this rushing attack and they can actually do that now.
Yeah.
And, you know, and put yourself in a position to score, but definitely secure the field goal. You're right. I think that was, I was cool with the approach. I was fine. I was like, all right, yep, just to, you know, take it down. But then, regardless of everything else that happened and what the official claims that he told CJ that the clock would be running at the snap,
yeah.
but I like that official had already established that he's a poor communicator, so I don't take his word for
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
But they were going to run a play. It's 5 seconds. You can't even take it. You can't take a shot at the end zone and expect there to be any time on the clock after that point if it's not a touchdown.
Well, they semi-ran the play. Like, the clock had run out. They were trying to get, like, 3 or 4 more yards. Like, CJ got the snap and immediately threw it towards the sideline.
Yeah.
You know, I think they were just trying to pick up because it was a 55-yard field goal.
With 5 seconds left, that's still kind of dicey.
I totally agree with you. I'm just saying that they weren't taking a shot at the end zone is all I'm saying.
Oh, I got you. Right. Yeah. But I'm saying even if, like, no matter – to me, the only thing – I wouldn't want to risk the 5 seconds.
I'm
guy
with
gets
you.
Tackled and somebody
yes.
got him wrapped up on the sideline or something. I just don't – just kick the field goal there.
No, you and I are on the same page with that. Like, yes, with 5 seconds, and even if the clock were running and they told you it was running, have CJ in there just to spike it and then bring the field goal team onto the field.
No, because what I would have been hoping was that maybe they had something on the defense that in that moment, in my mind, the only way you run a play is if you feel like you've got something for them based on their tendencies
right.
that is, that's got a better than average chance for a touchdown.
Right.
But like they did in the first play of the game last year.
Yes.
But that part of it, I can't completely excuse them. Except that everything was so random and screwed up at that point that and everything was so off that's just what happens when everything goes to pot. D'Amico's been incredibly good with his game management for the most part. That was a really weird one.
That was an outlier, I think. Yeah. What injected the most confusion into the whole thing, I think, was when the referees it was a short completion to Dalton Schultz. Honestly, I don't even know why New York was getting involved in the first place. It was such an inconsequential play that they ended up upholding, by the way. They didn't overturn it. They upheld it. New York, inside the last 2 minutes, the review's got to come from the booth, and they review this play. And once they review it, they decide to put 15 seconds back on the clock. They decide to.
I was glad that didn't make any sense.
Made no sense. It benefited the
whatsoever.
Texans.
Yeah.
It benefited the Texans. Instead of the clock being at like 6, they put it at 15. And this is where it got confusing, is that's where Shane Steichen calls a timeout because he has some to burn, and he calls the referees over like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
And so it was the right thing to do because somebody corrected it. Yeah. And burn the 10 seconds. You had to do a 10-second runoff, I guess. But because of that, the timeout never, you know, the timeout got wiped away and the clock was running when the ball got played. If this sounds confusing, I apologize. Seth and I talked to each other before the game. We're like, we got to reset this topic. But resetting the actual play and what all went on, if you didn't watch it, is the most confusing stuff ever. Just know that the referees communicated poorly, I think, with the two teams. The Texans probably should have known that the clock was going to wind as soon as the ball got placed with 5 seconds left. What ended up happening was the Texans ended up ending the half without getting a field goal attempt. You know, they left 3 points potentially off the board.
Yeah, the one thing I'd say there is that they claimed afterwards that they told CJ that the clock was going to be running. I don't trust that their communication skills were correct in that moment.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell was going on. Because that is what there's no CJ did not operate as if he knew the clock was going to be running.
That's
so
right.
So I highly doubt that they actually told CJ the appropriate thing.
And I think CJ's a good listener. I think if somebody had told him that, he would have known. I think he's a good listener. I think he's attentive. I don't think he didn't pay attention in class, except when he was watching YouTubes of Drew Brees.
That's what these older women appreciate about him. Yeah. For a young man, he's a
attentive.
Very good listener. Yes.
He's attentive, yes. Here's CJ on his version of what happened at the end of the half.
Week one, everybody's rusty. So I'm rusty. We're rusty is the whole, you know, I think the officials told us one thing, but, you know, we got another. And it's up to us to really make the situation right. It's my job, you know what I mean? So I got to be better right there. And that's something we can definitely learn from, you know what I mean? I definitely don't think it's the end of the world, but those points could have cost us, you know what I mean? So we definitely got to be better.
I think that, I guess in that moment, if CJ's going to take the responsibility on himself, perhaps maybe it's like okay, you do have time here to just stop, like, have the official really spell it out here, you know? But at the same time, on offense, you're trying to catch the defense off guard as much as possible.
Yeah.
I blame... And CJ, and this is because, look, CJ doesn't want to give up $50,000 for criticizing the officials or what have you. You're never going to get the straight story out of everything.
Right.
Because coaches and players are very hesitant to criticize the officials.
Yep. I think you and I are in agreement that the one area here where the Texans definitely, where we questioned the decision was to even try to run a play there with 5 seconds.
Yeah, because of what happened, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's just too much that can go wrong.
Yeah.
You don't know exactly what's going to go wrong, but there's too much that can go wrong over the course of 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Unless, my only was if they had something that they felt like, all right, we feel like we actually got a good shot at the end zone.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. Couple texts, and then we'll get to acknowledge me. This is a good one, Seth. I am definitely curious your thoughts on this, and I know you haven't had a chance probably to fully rewatch the game. They didn't put up a lot in the way of stats, but we have a texter asking, did Will Anderson Jr. and Danielle Hunter play well
right.
in this game?
I thought they did because for this reason. The reason that two of your defensive tackles have the two sacks in the game was because they did a really good job of a disciplined, compressed pocket. There was one play where Anthony Richardson seeped out to the right, and I would put that actually on the defensive tackle should have replaced, because I think it was Danielle Hunter took an inside move on that play. And when you've got veteran defensive tackles, usually it's like in this, when you're more of a run stuffer variety, you've got kind of always got to have your defensive end in the peripheral. And that when you see him go inside, you go out to replace.
Oh, okay.
And that, yeah, that's, and they did a good job of that for the most part. Foley Fatukasi ended up getting, I think his sack was off of that where he replaced the defensive end.
Yeah.
But for the most part on the day, they did a good job of that. One of those, I think it was Mario Edwards' sack. Will Anderson was like bull rushing the right tackle right into the quarterback. So, with a mobile quarterback compressing the pocket, making it really uncomfortable for him, all of that, I thought they did a good job. So, yeah, I haven't gone back and watched each snap yet or anything. But on the day, I felt pretty good about it, including some of Anthony Richardson's really spectacular throws were under duress.
Yeah.
The
60-yard one, Danielle Hunter's walking the right tackle right into his lap.
Right, right. So, you know, that's on Jimmy Ward. We saw this with Jimmy Ward last year late in the season, couple plays that they got beat deep for no good reason.
Yep.
It wasn't even an athletic thing. It's just kind of an awareness thing. That's the huge blemish from yesterday, these huge shots that the defense gave up, which was the same issue they had last year. Play really good defense for a long time, and then all of a sudden,
This game should not have been as close as it was. You know what I mean? Like play to play, the Texans won a vast majority of the plays compared to the Colts. It's just that literally, the Colts scored four touchdowns. Two of them were plays of 54 yards or more. Yeah. The other one was set up by a 55-yard or 57-yard prayer on 3rd and 15. And the other one was set up by a block punt that made it a 5-yard touchdown. Like this, those are complete outlier plays that just, you know, it's not going to happen.
And for anybody wondering, I know the first tendency is to blame the cornerback. Look, on that deep, deep, deep touchdown, that was like immediately after the play, you saw Jimmy Ward tapped his own chest.
Yeah.
That was 2/3 of the way across the field from Derek Stingley's alignment and quarters coverage. Yeah. It was that Jimmy's got to get back there. Now, the cover zero blitz where Stingley just flat out let A.D. Mitchell run past him.
Yeah.
And you're only saved by Anthony Richards not genuinely being a good NFL quarterback. Yeah. I mean, that's right there. That's the game if they connect on a very easy touchdown pass there.
Yep. All right. You can text in 713-572-4610. You're right. There were a couple like that with Richardson. Man, he giveth and he taketh away for sure. All right. Let's do some acknowledge me. Let's acknowledge some of the big performances from the weekend. We got some Texans in here. We got a little Astros in here. I also will acknowledge something that happened in college football this weekend. I'm a big enough man to do that, but let's get to it.
Acknowledge me.
That's what we hit each time we acknowledge somebody. Let's start with the Texans offensive line.
Acknowledge me.
Probably acknowledged in the best way possible after the game by Stephon Diggs. Here was Stephon Diggs on the Texans' offensive line.
O-line. You got to give the O-line his credit. I mean, we get all, the hoopla. We got the celebrations and all that. But the game is won up front. Playing on the other side of the scrimmage, line of scrimmage is huge. Our O-line dropped their nuts when they had to. Came out with a dub. Joe didn't do it by himself. But, you know, it's just a game changer when you can run the ball with 4 minutes left, 3 minutes left. Get those two big first downs. You ain't got to put it in the air. You're on to something.
Stephon Diggs sounds so excited there at the end. When you don't have to put it in the air and you can keep it on the ground, you're doing something right there, and he's right.
Honestly, and so yesterday, Stephon Diggs had two touchdowns. This is, Sean, what I predicted, was it not? That you're not going to be able to predict which guy has the most yardage in any given game amongst these wide receivers, but I think all of them are going to have more opportunities for touchdowns because there's room to run. Stephon Diggs wide open on a freaking slant. You know, that doesn't happen. That
wide open.
When they were using, and they were using Stephon Diggs on shorter stuff in the same way that Buffalo was last year, the difference is that there's room to run.
On a slant, you know? On a slant inside the 10.
Right.
It was a 9-yard
right.
touchdown.
Yeah. Yeah. So not to take away from, and then on the sideline, early in the game, remember, they showed on the sideline, Stephon Diggs is, he's saying something, I think he was saying, My bad.
Yeah.
It very looked clear like he was saying, my bad. But he speaks, he's so animated when he speaks that I could easily see somebody from Buffalo lip reading that is like, I'm sad.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, he does it all the time. He's very animated.
Very animated.
And people are going to see it how they see it. But, like, I think he's always communicating positively. And yesterday was maybe not the best example where, like, hey, it's not going to be any big deal because he did have two touchdowns.
Yeah.
But I think that he's happy to be on a functioning offense that's doing things the way they're supposed to do. The Bills' rushing attack was largely Josh Allen-based and has been for a long time. This is something the Bills haven't been able to do the last couple of years, is really run the ball conventionally when they need to run the ball.
Yeah, neither of the Texans, but they were able to yesterday, and it was nice. But, you know, while we're on Diggs, let's acknowledge Diggs.
Haven't
done that yet.
Me.
He had a couple touchdowns, including, this was a big one, man, DeMeco going for it on fourth and goal from the 2. I like this call by DeMeco at the time, and I love this play.
Stroud in the gun. Mix it to his left. Here's the snap. CJ stepping to his left. Throws to the end zone. Caught. Diggs. Touchdown number 2. It's a beauty. And the Texans are about to go up 2 scores again.
Here was DeMeco Ryans on Stephon Diggs.
Same. Steph was Steph. Like, he showed up in the big time moments. Got a touchdown for us. Like, that's who he's been, right? And I'm excited to have him, and he shows what he can do for us.
All right, so that was DeMeco. Seth, you and I were out at all these practices at training camp, and there were so many times where the Texans threw that out route that CJ threw to Diggs right there. Now, oftentimes not at the 2-yard line, you know, in a fourth down situation like that. But, and it's not just Diggs, it's Tank and Nico too. Like, just I just marvel, like, that's not as easy as they make it look.
No. I mean,
they make it look so easy.
And it's Diggs route running, too.
Yeah.
And this is where the stuff that I think the Bills offense coordinator, Joe Brady, saw. I think he saw the potential for stuff like that. The Bills just didn't have the offense to, and the Bills offense got better after Joe Brady took over. But you can see where this is the exact type of thing that I think that they were probably envisioning with Stephon Diggs, but they just couldn't capitalize on it with that assortment of talent up in Buffalo, to where you can be better as an offense, but also Stephon Diggs is still going to get his. And this is where, when you have the threat, the deep threat with Nico and Tank, but then also the stuff underneath, the way you can spread the coverage out in the red zone especially is just different. And that's where, I mean, it's going to be a different guy every week. It really is. So Tank Dell might have 3 touchdowns on 27 yards receiving next
yep,
week.
Yep.
Nico Collins at some point is going to hit a couple touchdowns on 33 yards receiving.
Yep.
It's really exciting to think about the possibilities.
Yes, and I think it feels like all those receivers are bought into that being the situation. Yep. You know, that's the best part.
And since I ended up making it about Stephon Diggs when Stephon Diggs acknowledged the offensive line,
yeah.
I would say especially Juice Scruggs and Kenyon Green, because those were the guys we were going to watch the most.
Acknowledge them, Seth.
They did. They went through puberty yesterday. Somewhere during training camp, I won't use the same phrasing that Stephon Diggs did. But, yeah, they looked like full-grown men out there, and it was nice to see. Kenyon Green threw Zaire Franklin out of the bar on one Joe Mixon.
Dude, yeah, go look at it.
And I know Zaire Franklin is just going to be, that's going to fuel him for the next 3 years of his life.
That was on the video you sent to me before the show. Did you post that, or is that from your YouTube?
That's from YouTube. I'll post it on Twitter here after the
yeah,
show.
Yeah, post that video.
I don't want to multitask and destroy everything.
No, it's all good. Yeah. It's all good. It's good stuff. Framber Valdez.
Acknowledge me.
Well, Justin Verlander gives up 8 earned runs yesterday. Framber Valdez continues to be arguably the best pitcher in all of baseball over the last month and a half. 7 shutout innings on Friday versus the highest scoring offense in baseball to that point. He was dominant. 2 hits, 3 walks, 7 strikeouts. He was great. His last 7 games, Seth, he has 5 wins, an ERA under 2, 55 strikeouts. He's got a whip walk hits per inning pitched of 0.70, which is microscopic. That's less than 0.7 base runners per inning. Since 2020, he leads all of Major League Baseball with 58 wins. I think Michael Schwab posted this. Since 2020, Framber Valdez is the winningest pitcher in baseball, and he's got the fourth best ERA. In the playoffs since 2020, he's got the most playoff wins, most innings pitched, most strikeouts in that time. So now, Framber's had some clunkers in the playoffs over that time, but the most impressive part to me is just he's back. You know, there was that 2022 Framber is back in the building again.
Yeah, as we've got so much fear and worry about Verlander and what he's doing right now, Framber is looking like the old consecutive games, consecutive quality starts, yeah, games pitched record and all of that. You know what else was nice to see? Blanco being used as a reliever. So
it was good.
There we go. Yeah.
Five strikeouts in two innings, man. He was good.
Well, you kind of forget that that was his role at one point.
Sure.
You know, that's it's not like this is some huge sea change in his methodology or anything. But if we could just get over the minor detail of Verlander pitching like a major leaguer again, then we'll be good. Sometimes I look out there and I watch Verlander. I'm like, oh, is this one of those minor league call-ups that we've had to rely on? But no, it's actually Verlander,
Justin,
one of the all-time greats.
Future Hall of Famer, yeah. Kyle Tucker came back this week, and that was good. Let's acknowledge Tucker.
Acknowledge
for
me!
Coming back from his injury and for running wind sprints on the field after the Friday game, while Friday fireworks were going on. So you got the whole crowd there watching fireworks after the Friday night game. You know, they turn all the lights off in the stadium, and they're shooting off fireworks over the left field wall there. And there's Tucker out in the outfield running wind sprints while everybody's watching the fireworks. It was a pretty funny visual. All right, let's get to these last couple. Saquon Barkley.
Acknowledge me.
24 carries, 109 yards. He had two touchdowns on the ground, one receiving touchdown. Here's what the final touchdown sounded
like. At the 3-yard line, Barkley in the backfield once again on second and one. Barkley takes the handoff straight through the middle, pounding forward in the middle of the field, and he is in for the touchdown.
Westwood One on the that audio courtesy of Westwood One. You heard that game right here on Friday night on Sports Radio 610. The guy that we need to check on this morning, and probably every morning from now until the time he's no longer with us, is Giants owner John Mara. Let's rewind, go back in the rewind machine, and recall Hard Knocks offseason, where Joe Shane, the GM of the Giants, is basically lying to John Mara's face about the Saquon Barkley free agency situation.
What's the latest? Just on the Saquon thing.
I just got a text that Chicago's driving the price up and Philly's out. I don't know if that's true or not.
Hmm.
Which I don't know if I'll make a couple calls. I don't even know if that's gonna happen, but
I'm gonna have a tough time sleeping if Saquon goes to Philadelphia. I'll tell you that, as I've told you, just being out. I have been around enough players, but he's the most popular player we have by far.
Yeah.
We should point out the Giants got blown out at home by the Minnesota Vikings yesterday.
Joe Shane is so fired, man.
He's a dead man walking.
If Saquon Barkley goes off against the Giants, he might get fired in the booth. Joe Shane, the problem with this, if you guys didn't watch Hard Knocks offseason, it was awesome. I can't wait for whichever team desperately tries not to have this next year but has it. I can't wait to watch that team. Joe Shane is going to get fired. Might have gotten fired anyway, but specifically because of he spent that entire series trying to convince everybody in the building, all his scouts, everybody else, that there's no way anybody else really wanted Saquon Barkley. Certainly not the Eagles. It didn't make any sense for the Eagles to take Saquon Barkley. All of this. And then Saquon Barkley, it's one thing that's helping that, look, I'm also being proven wrong on Saquon Barkley. He's got to stay healthy. But, man, it's not looking good for Joe Shane.
It is not. It's going to be fun to watch. All right, last one. I'm a big enough man to acknowledge Northern Illinois University football.
Acknowledge me!
Play it, Ben. Final play of the game. Let's go.
He's lining it up. 5 seconds left. NIU up 16-14. 62-yarder. Snap, hold, Jeter's kick, it's blocked, picked up by NIU, the Huskies have done it, the Huskies! Hokies with the biggest upset in NIU history. They come to South Bend, Indiana, and they knock off the number 5 team in the country. NIU 16, Notre Dame 14. The football gods were shining down on NIU.
Dude, local small college town radio calls are the best.
Yeah,
best.
Especially, you know, you're from that region of the country. Notre Dame's the big gushing, like everybody. Oh, they're so great, and just even though they don't generally do much. Sorry, Sean. That
hey,
sucks.
Man, I'm a big enough man to. You got to kick a man while he's down. I was big enough to acknowledge Northern Illinois.
You're kicking a lot of Aggies while they were down last week.
Was I pretty obnoxious?
Okay, you couldn't hide it. It's the same way when New England people back when the Patriots were awesome.
Yeah.
That they couldn't understand how smug they came off. Yeah. You were that way.
People are asking me, look at it, text, Sean, how are you doing after the ND game? I'm fine. I'm not saying this because they lost and it's like, oh, I didn't care anyways. You can't fire me. I quit. No, it's not one of those things. I don't get as emotionally attached to Notre Dame football as I used to. If they went to the playoff this year, I'd be rooting for them and whatnot. I was way more about, my Notre Dame friends aren't going to like to hear this, I was way more into what was going on yesterday up in Indianapolis than I was what was going on in South Bend on Saturday. I actually love the post game of this Notre Dame loss. The coach of NIU, Thomas Hammack, who has been there for, this is his sixth year as the head coach, he played there, this is the only head coaching job I would take, that kind of thing. This was a cool post game interview on the field.
Coach, I can sense that you need a moment. Top 5 opponent. This is NIU's first win against a top 10 opponent ever. And for people who need context, you wore this jersey. It's deep for you. Why?
You know, I'm so proud of our kids, the coaches, just everybody. They believed. They believed. And we came here and got it done.
Man, age of NIL in the transfer portal. Yeah. I love me a good Mac school with a crying head coach afterwards.
He's a guy that was, was he in the NFL before he took that job?
I think he was. They were telling that story like he was an NFL assistant and this is the only job he would have left the NFL for. Yeah.
There were a lot of, you know, there's a lot of really good coaches out there at smaller schools who have been there for decades that just, they would never leave because they're fully enjoying the collegiate experience and love working with the kids and everything. And, I mean, in this day and age, it's harder and harder. Because, like, Northern Illinois, probably going to be a couple kids that transfer based on that their performance in that game.
I thought the same thing, Seth. Yeah. I'm like, oh, it's this happy family. And now these kids are getting calls from agents at SEC schools.
Yeah. Sean, you and I both went to schools that were last nationally relevant in football in the 1920s. And sometimes it's easier. You can kind of look at that school's endowment. And meanwhile, while you're fielding calls from fundraisers who tell you how much money they need, you're like, go die.
Yeah.
You guys are doing, you don't even know. You're trying to find out ways to spend that money because you're having a hard time staying under the nonprofit category.
It's easier
to distance yourself.
Thomas Hammack was the Ravens running back coach for 5 years, from 14 to 18, and then he left to go back to his alma mater. So that's a cool story. I hate that it happened to my school, but I think everybody else loves it happened to my school, and it's a cool story, so I'm here for it. All right, last segment coming up, and then we're going to hand it over to what I would imagine is an exuberant Texans Monday here on Sports Radio 610 with John Harris and Mark Vandermeer. Oh, by the way, quick acknowledgement for Vandy and Johnny.
Acknowledge.
They both said before the game on Friday on Texans All Access, it's going to take 28 points to win this game. 29-27 final score. Good job, fellas. Way to go. We will not ignore in victory what we would pay attention to in defeat. We're going to do that in the final segment. There's some things the Texans need to clean up, and D'Amico knows it. That's coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Richardson fakes the give. Here's a little pressure. He slips down. Now he guns it long downfield and caught. Pierce, touchdown. A bomb to take the lead.
Main plays when we had to, but not good enough, right? Got to eliminate the big plays. That's when you give up points. When you give up the big plays, that equal points. So overall, we had some good spurts there, good on third down, but just the last one just cannot happen.
Yeah, this game did not need to be as close as it was yesterday. We had a few people texting like, hey, man, it feels like the Texans kind of let these guys hang around a little bit, and they did.
Yeah.
They had a 9-point lead multiple times in this game. You know,
down in and down out, it was physical domination, really, in a lot of regards. I think the fact that Jonathan Taylor averaged 3 yards per carry was probably the best indicator. Anthony Richardson is going to get yardage on the ground when he decides to pull it down and run. You can't worry about that. You just got to play fundamentally sound football. And I thought, for the most part, the Texans defense played fundamentally sound football, except for some glaringly bad errors,
yeah,
and or defeats deep downfield. They got really, really lucky that on a what looked like a cover zero blitz by the TV copy, that Derek Stingley just let A.D. Mitchell run right past him. I mean, I think it's good to trust that the blitz is going to get there and everything, but man, that's not what happened.
Yeah.
A.D. Mitchell was wide open, and Anthony Richardson, bless his heart, is just Anthony Richardson. He's going to make some incredible throws. He's going to botch some simple ones.
Are you worried that the big plays they gave up yesterday are something that's going to be a trend, or these outlier? Like, how do you assess it?
The thing that I'm most worried about is that, look, Jimmy Ward doesn't have the excuse of being a young guy or something. Right. Derek Stingley doesn't get a pass on that one play, but he is at the least still a young guy. It's a teaching moment. Jimmy Ward's not a young guy, and whether it's a blend of either error or just physically doesn't have it anymore. I mean, when you watch the little graphics they do where they show the motion tracking technology,
yeah.
And you can see on there, there's two little circles. One little circle is Derek Stingley. One little circle is Jimmy Ward. And one little circle in the middle is Alec Pierce, the wide receiver. And you can just kind of watch that little circle moving across the field.
Yeah.
And you can see that Jimmy Ward's little circle picked him up, but he's trailing the whole way. And again, it's tough versus Anthony Richardson, because you've always got one eye in the backfield to see if he pulls it down and runs. But that's the stuff that's just got to get better. I think Kalen Bullock, it'll be interesting to look at Kalen Bullock's snap count and see if it increases over the next few weeks. I think with Kalen Bullock, they want to kind of see how much they can trust him. But look, that play, yeah, I know the play, his interception. I know the receiver slipped. Maybe it would have been a reception. I don't think it was the perfect pass that the announcing crew seemed desperate to say that it was. But the ball skills of Kalen Bullock were very much evident there. Not everybody makes that interception.
No.
Defensive backs especially. Notorious for being defensive backs for a reason.
Yeah.
That was a very nice catch by Kalen Bullock.
That was a receiver style. That was like a good receiver catch is what that was.
I think that a lot of people will say, and especially right now, if you're somebody that really wanted Justin Simmons, yeah, I think you've got reason to be disgruntled. And they'll say, why didn't they address the safety position? They addressed the safety position with Kalen Bullock. They used a second-round pick on Kalen Bullock. And I think that's what they're hoping is the replacement for Jimmy Ward. Which, by the way, extra shout-out, Ben, if you still got it.
Oh, an acknowledgement, you mean?
Acknowledge me. Extra acknowledgement.
Acknowledge me!
Eric Murray.
Ooh.
The difference in that game was 2 points. Eric Murray stopped the 2-point conversion with a very, very clutch play down there on that 2-point conversion.
Yeah.
So good job. Eric Murray, who people are perennially under-acknowledging because Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby paid him way too much money and thought he was going to be something he wasn't. But that was clutch there by Eric Murray.
It was clutch. Yeah, no, that was great. This is a fun text right here. Is it me or was it scary that we ran the ball that much because we're not used to it? There were times where I'm yelling at the TV, why are we running? They know it's coming, yet we managed to still gain yards. Super blessed for Mixon. Let me tell this to the texter. And Seth, I'm sure you would tell this person the same thing. This is what good teams do. This is what good running teams do. Like, yeah, they know it's coming and they can't stop it.
Most good teams will be upset that you're passing in that situation.
Correct.
Run the ball.
Yeah.
Run the ball. Remember when CJ threw that interception last year? People were upset because the Texans weren't running. And I couldn't go there in the Bengals game where he threw the interception.
Yeah.
I couldn't go there because, like, why? Why would you want to run the ball? They were awful. They were atrocious.
Yeah.
What are you seriously sitting here and telling me you're going to coach and play call last year based on the Football 101 guide to how to handle right. closeout situations? They couldn't run the ball.
No.
This year, you can actually do the Football 101 stuff.
Oh, text message I just saw. Oh, Ben, sorry. We keep having you hit the acknowledge me. Keith, it's just, this is such a fun win. British Brooks.
Acknowledge.
Yes.
Dude. First pop of the game, man. Right?
I did a reaction to the highlights yesterday.
Yeah.
And I had forgotten about the British Brooks hit. And the one thing NFL, all preseason long in the highlights, they put these, you know, some algorithm puts it together. But it seems like they'd instructed the computers to put all the kickoffs and kickoff returns on there because it was
definitely,
new.
Definitely, yeah. Propaganda.
So I knee-jerk. They kick it off, and I'm like, oh, here we go again. They're going to show the stupid kick. Oh, my God, it's British Brooks.
British Brooks killed a man. He killed him. British Brooks killed a man.
That was still evidence of why the new kickoff rules are stupid, because it's still, it wasn't a successful kickoff return, obviously. But, man, British Brooks, nice job. But also, in that, as Joe Mixon said earlier, like, I'm looking to see if British Brooks is going to be a fullback. Yesterday, the hybrid tight end slash fullbacks, Cade Stover and Dalton Schultz, did really a really good job blocking when they were in that lead blocker position when they were playing the fullback. So there was a lot of good stuff going on in the run game.
Yeah, man. That might be the solution there, fullback. All right. Oh, man, already? All right. Got a lot of meat on the bone for tomorrow. Excited to hear the fellas on Texans Monday. John Harris and Mark Vandermeer, you got them. Keep it tuned here all day long. You got In the Loop at 10, The Drive at 2. No Area 55 tonight, Monday Night Football, Jets Niners. We're pumped for that. Seth, antibodies to you, my friend. This was fun.
Antibodies to you, my friend.